Hello and welcome to NYPD Blue Balls. This is a podcast about NYPD Blue episode, season 8, episode 11, Peeping Tommy. Now we're kind of all over the joint with this one, so it's best to have watched the episode before you listen to this podcast. And right now NYPD Blue is available on Hulu, and it is also available on Freevee. But it has commercials, and I don't think it has the high-definition versions. One thing I'm not 100% sure of, which I still need to check, they may have the unedited versions. I know that Hulu has the syndication edits, where they actually cut the episodes to the same length, so the episodes that were an hour on television without commercials are now 40 minutes. Whole lot of explanation to say Freevee has a less quality version than Hulu, but they all might be syndication edits. Not that important. Just watch season 8, episode 11 before listening to this podcast. It'll make it easier on you. Anyway, here we go.
Okay, well, it looks like we've already started.
Because the title of this episode follows the story, because, well, we'll talk about it.
Well, no, I mean, start it now. We don't do the intro like we used to, which I know you...
I'm going to be honest, I don't remember the second part of the story from this episode, because that's what bothers me, is that this episode is like solely based on like one story, and I don't feel the title reflects the one story that is like the main story.
And looking at the side story doesn't really make any sense with Peeping
Tommy
either.
But does it have Tommy? Okay, was there anyone named Tommy in the first one?
I don't think so.
Okay, let's go. Start it. Start it how you like to start it.
Start it how I like to start it.
This is Kirk. I'm Kyle. There we go. Episode start. Sorry.
Well, we're talking about season 8, episode 11, That's Peeping right, Tommy. I imagine it'll come up. I'm standing because I threw my back out sleeping. So Kyle might mention it as a joke as we do the podcast that I'm currently standing.
No, it sucks. Your back hurts.
But the title, it's season 8, episode 11, Peeping Tommy, and we'll be the first to tell you, I don't know why it's called that.
Yeah, right?
It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
One story is about Sipowicz in a jackpot, as they say.
Was one of the kids in the car named Tommy?
I don't think so.
Tommy!
I don't even think, because you said you don't remember the other story.
Yeah.
Which the other story was a robbery / rape.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you know why it's Peeping Tommy? The camera in the bathroom.
But why Tommy?
I don't know, because it's Peeping Tommy. Was the owner Tom? Maybe the owner?
I don't know. You're the one that takes notes.
I didn't take notes on the owner. Maybe the owner is named Tom.
Not giving a hardworking man his due. Anyway, so there's two stories that are happening at this time, but we'll start with
the owner of the bar.
Yeah, then that's dumb. That's stupid.
Because they don't even say his name.
That's stupid. That's dumb. That's dumb. The title should have something to do.
The title
should have something to do with what's happening with Sipowicz, because that is the main story of what's happening.
Yeah, the story opens with Sipowicz telling a story that, I'll be honest, if I heard secondhand, I thought he just shot at a car full of black kids. If a dude told me this story and I didn't know him, I'd be like... The whole story from his perspective?
From whose perspective?
Sipowicz.
From Sipowicz's perspective of, I saw... So you're saying if I'm Sipowicz.
You're Sipowicz.
Okay, and you're like, what happened?
Yes.
It's like, okay, and this is how I tell it, okay? I was driving down the street. Mm-hmm. I saw a white guy walking by himself, and I saw two black kids walking behind them. The black kids were showing suspectable behavior,
suspicious behavior?
Suspicious behavior. So I made two rights, came back around, and when I came back around, I noticed that the two black kids had jumped the white kid.
Yes.
So I got out and said the police to stop them. They ran.
They booked.
I got the guy up, put him in my car, yes. Followed them. Mm-hmm. Got out to stop them. When I was in the street to stop them, one of them pulled out a gun, so I shot at them.
Yes.
How is he in the wrong?
I'm not saying he's in the wrong. What I'm saying is, if I heard the story as he tells it, I'd be like...
But I just told that how he should tell it.
But I don't know if you finished it. One, the witness that you saved from the robbery left his car.
Yeah, he ran.
He ran out of his car.
He ran.
Two, he has no witnesses to the guy having a gun. And if anyone is a witness to the crime, they just see him pull up, then walk up to the car, and then start shooting at it if they didn't see that the guy had a gun in the car. I'll be the first to admit that the first two times I watched this episode, I did not even notice that the guy had a gun in the car. Could just be due to this definition. I don't know.
I did. The gun was huge.
But when Sipowicz has to tell that story to an unknown third party, it's suspicious because he's saying, I saved a dude. You can't find him because he didn't stick around. And then I shot at this car because I saw a gun. Nobody else saw the gun. And we can't find those kids. If you just heard that story, not knowing Sipowicz, not knowing the situation, you'd be like, did this guy just shoot at a car full of people and he's now making up a story to justify why he shot at a car full of people? I'm not saying it's what happened. I'm saying if you heard the story, it'd be suspicious.
Well, Kirk, I think this is a bigger issue that, like, you hate cops.
Well, according to some people who comment on our show, we certainly do.
And you don't defend them. Because what about that thin blue line, bro?
But that the whole beginning of this episode is really... it's really written like, we're putting Sipowicz in a jackpot. It's also a, Sipowicz just saved Danny. Now Danny's got to save Sipowicz.
Oh, I guess that's more true, yeah.
It's
that's
got, more like, true. Yeah, and Danny just really, like, fucking stepped
just
in
just goes above and beyond. Yeah, Danny goes above and beyond because of what Sipowicz did with the hit, beating up the guy.
So
Phil Lamar's character.
Because as Kyle described,
do your pervert things.
Pervert things. I have been beaten by perverts. I do not agree to be here.
I have been beaten by perverts. That's funny.
So this episode is really about Sipowicz telling his side of the story, but they can't find any proof whatsoever.
No, and they set it up, and like we'll talk more, we'll get more in depth with it, I guess. But they also make you feel like everyone else is out to get, like everyone else just wants Sipowicz gone because of this.
And you know, because you know what, I've been really thinking like maybe it only took to season 8, episode 11, but maybe I recap the episode too much, and people probably have watched the episode or listened to the show, so we can jump around. As someone who has an undergrad in psychology, that therapist is the worst fucking therapist ever. Because that is an interrogation. It's not a therapy session. It is not a therapy session at all. He basically comes in, he's like, so, do you hate black people? Yeah, like, and it's like, what? You don't even know who this
so
dude is.
So you shot
is.
At that car, yeah. Was it because they're black? Well, I don't know. I can't answer that question. I couldn't tell you because they're not white. So he's like, yeah, but because they're black, that's why you shot at them, right? But that actor,
Timothy Omundson. Omundson?
I like that guy. He
Omundson.
He's in Deadwood.
Yeah,
but a lot of people may know him from Psych. He plays the straight man in Psych. He's pretty funny in that.
And if you watch Disney Channel original movies, he is the evil leprechaun from The Luck of the Irish.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
The second I see that dude's face in anything, I go, Luck of the Irish. And then everybody in the world goes, Psych, you idiot. And it's like, I've never seen Psych.
Nah, he's only in, I think, like the first season of Deadwood. But he's really good. He plays like an uppity New York money guy. He's pretty good. I forget his name. Oh, Brom Garrett, I think. It's pretty, they're all fucking good in that show. It's the best show on TV ever.
But the Sipowicz side of the story is, Sipowicz is telling the story, and on the sidelines because he can't work on his own case. But you're right. Every single person who talked to him is giving him the third degree. Like, the duty, I don't know if it's the duty sergeant or duty captain.
Yeah.
To tell the story to. He's like, have you been drinking?
Well, that guy.
Objective.
And then, you know, like, Sipowicz, which is funny, it makes me laugh because I feel like if you're 4.5 years in sober, you're more, he should be more zen when asked that question. I guess he's riled up because he shot at people. I don't know what that feels like. But when he asks him, he looks at him, he's like, he gets mad at him, and the guy's like, hey, I have to ask the question.
It is true.
It made me think, like, if I was the duty captain, I'd be like, why are you so defensive about it? Mm. But you did just shoot at people. I've never had that feeling, so I can't comment on that, but yeah.
It's great to compare that questionnaire with that cop to the therapist, because that guy, if you watch it, he's just asking standard questions and writing it down. And he gets to the drinking one, and I think even he can tell if he's a good enough cop that, okay, he had a drinking problem, and it's really going to be a sticking point for him because he feels like this is a good shoot.
But if you notice before that, he asked a bunch of standard questions about him, if he got enough sleep. That's a big thing about, like, were you groggy? Were you tired? And then there's like, oh, are you under the, and like, so I think Sid was just maybe amped on the shooting. That therapist, though, yeah, that was funny. Because even Sipwood says when LaFancy makes him go, Sipwood makes the comment like, yeah, and he says to him, he's like, normally they give you a couple of days, a day or two before they call you down to the, like, psych ward or whatever, to talk to the therapist. So, yeah, it just felt like, and then even when Martens comes in, Martens tells him straight up, he's like, you need to have this solved by the end of the day. Like, they're going to arrest Sipwood. Mm-hmm. They want an arrest right away.
And he does take a second to mention, this is from the Ivory Tower. I have nothing to do with it.
And then my favorite part when he leaves and then Sipwood looks at Fancy, goes, nice chat.
Well, yeah, it's
one thing I want to say real quick. When I had on the subtitles for Martens, they
you
write
say Martinez.
Martinez.
That's fucking wrong.
And I'm just like, if I'm deaf watching this and they keep saying Martinez, do I think that man is Hispanic?
Or do you think suddenly James Martinez is back?
Well, no, because now it makes me want to go back and like
see if they do
watch when
others.
Martinez is there and see if it's just Martinez Martinez or Martina Martinez.
Martina Martinez.
R.I.P.
That's been taken off Hulu.
Yeah, R.I.P. Can't see her anymore. Hulu. Yeah.
It's very interesting because I said that's the worst therapist in the world. He goes down and the therapist
berates him.
I'm not a therapist, obviously. But I feel like the first thing you should do is, how do you feel about what happened today? And also, he shouldn't be talking to him today. It was that morning.
Yeah.
He should not be talking to him.
Less than 8 hours.
So the fact that he brings him in and he goes, would you have shot? He says basically, you mentioned that they were black youth. He's like, it's a police report.
Yeah.
You have to mention every detail that you can think of. He's like, oh, would you have shot at him if they weren't black? And it's like, you're a therapist?
Doesn't he say something like, I would have shot at them because they had a gun?
And it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. Now, one thing about Sipowicz's story, which I don't know if you felt this, and now it's time to really piss off those that back the blue. He said in his story repeatedly, they pointed the gun at me. It took till the third episode for me to actually see the gun. It's never pointed at Sipowicz. The guy brings it up from the back seat.
Yeah, but cops are taught once the gun is shown, it's a threat. And Sipowicz doesn't know why. Why are you bringing that gun up? And Sipowicz announced himself multiple times, police.
He's saying that they pointed it at him, which is not true.
Okay. That's I'm not a back the blue guy, but that's like,
I don't disagree that
tomato,
once you
tomato,
see the gun,
tomato, tomato, bro.
I just noticed that he said every time, like, he pointed a gun. A gun was pointed at me. I was like, no, it wasn't. Anyway.
So you're telling me if you were just walking up and someone just like pulled a gun up like this, your first instinct wouldn't just be like to freak out and be like, what the fuck are you pointing a gun at me for?
No, I'd freak out. I'd shit my pants.
Okay, moving on.
I nearly shat my pants when I heard gunshots at my church. So.
There were gunshots at your church?
You knew the story.
I don't remember. Not at a church, though. That's where God is.
So Sipowicz.
Yeah.
It really is everywhere he turns, people are like questioning his story because it's questionable. And even after they interview one of the black gentlemen, his cousin and their friend are injured from gunshot wounds. One of them's in stable condition, the other one they were still working on. And he tells them, I'm a college student. We went to a dance club. We left the dance club, and a dude rolled up on our car and started shooting at us.
Yeah, he's very confident about his story.
And then they said, oh, well, that the one thing, Danny is like way too aggressive with this dude, I think, in the hospital, because it is a hospital. And he's like, oh, really? That's a pharmaceutical giveaway. Like, he's like right up in his fucking face. And you're like, dude.
He says some like old timey shit. Like when he's talking with Russell and she's like, something about your apartment being dirty. He's like, oh, yeah, you have intimate knowledge about that.
Yeah, intimate knowledge.
He just says shit that makes him sound like a fucking grandpa, dude.
But what's funny is he gets right in this dude's face in a hospital, and he's like, you're disturbing the other patients. And he's like, then maybe you should leave. Like, you're the one yelling at me, dude.
You're the one that's you're the one that's aggro right now.
But after that conversation, like almost the whole squad pulls back in the hospital, and Sipowicz comes in like, yeah, you're not talking to him. They say you've shot the wrong car, and we don't have any witnesses proving otherwise, so you're not talking to him right now.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is, because of my first two watches, I didn't see the gun. I was like, how fucked up would the story be if... Because in the beginning of the episode, he has to chase them, and the car turns down an alley. Yeah. He turns down the alley. He sees the car, gets out, and walks up. What if it was a different car? Just happened to be another Jetta.
That would be fun. That would be a fun little romp down.
Because those kids are like, we didn't do anything.
Well, he's basically done as a character.
Yeah, he'd be
is
done.
Is that the way he goes out?
Yeah, that'd be the last of Sipowicz. So it has to be the other way. But yeah. So because Sipowicz really has no leg to stand on in terms of his story, Danny and Russell have to investigate this missing dude. Because Sipowicz says that he stopped a robbery, picked up the dude, then the dude fled the scene. So they have to find that dude. Mm-hmm. They get lucky and find his wallet, like under a car.
Yeah, and which is so random.
What's also really weird is they're like, yeah, fax it up to Lefrak City so that Andy can look at it. Which means before or after he went into this therapy session, that didn't go very well. He's like, what was that? Look at the facts. That's that motherfucker. Like So either before he goes into there, he's like, I'm getting screwed by the circumstance. Or right after he leaves, he's like, oh my gosh, they found the guy.
Let's go.
So it's like,
let's go.
That would be really, really shitty if you're Sipowicz. Either way. So Danny and Russell go to where that guy lives. And just from the conversation with his mother and him, very evasive.
Yeah, the mother's being very weird. She seems like she's on drugs, too.
She's also blocking them. Like, she physically blocks them from going towards her son.
Well, I mean, that's just a good mom.
Claims that he's been there all morning while she went to the gym.
Does she claim it, or does she just say, hey, if he says he was, he was?
That's what...
That's not claiming. That's different.
She's backing him up.
She's backing.
And Danny even calls out, like, her attitude towards police makes us think that he's had problems with the police in the past.
Yeah, Danny goes on and is like, he's skull material.
When they get off the elevator, Skelly. I think he says, like, he's 100% skull material.
He's 100% skull material, Diane.
And what's great is the reason that they really catch this guy is they go, okay, he's obviously tweaking. He was going to score drugs and he lost his wallet.
Yeah.
So now he's been home all day waiting for money so that he can go score again. So it's only a matter of time that he'll leave the apartment to go score.
Yeah, and then they like work out a deal with the doorman too to have him call when he leaves so they can kind of like time it right.
It's my favorite character because the doorman is like old school doorman who's like, I didn't see anything. I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know who you are. But then all Danny has to do is give him the golden ticket, a cop's card.
Oh, yeah, dude. If a cop tells you your family can call me for anything, yeah,
I'll tell you
whatever you need.
You get one cop favor. The second he looks at the card, sees that it's real, he goes, these motherfucking people.
Assholes.
They're the worst. They treat you like dirt. And they go, what's the son? He's like, what's his deal? Partier, drugs, rehab. He's like, giving him the whole story.
He's like, but I don't know that much. You want to talk to the night guy.
You want to talk to the night guy.
Let me call him first and tell him that it's okay to talk.
By the way, he sleeps on the job.
Yeah.
So he's like, so his information may not be the best.
He dozes off a little bit.
But what's cool is then Danny goes into his wallet and goes, gives him, I think, a 20.
Yeah.
And goes, call me when he leaves. And the guy goes, all right, got you. They run it for Fancy. Sipowicz is pissed because the kid won't admit he's even there. So Sipowicz is like, I'm fucked. I'm screwed. They say they're going to wait on him.
What's the kid we haven't talked about. He's a famous face.
Jordan Belfort?
Yeah, he was in...
Eric Belfort.
Eric Belfort. Jordan Belfort, I think, is Wolf of Wall Street.
Yes.
Eric Belfort. No, he was in 6 Feet Under.
6 Feet Under. He was in the miniseries The Offer about the making of The Godfather.
Didn't see that.
He was also in 24, I believe, for a season or two.
Okay.
And he was in the magnificent motion picture Skyline.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Eric Belfort, he eventually leaves the apartment. Diane and Danny have a quick conversation just to remind everybody that they boned. Where it's like the intimate knowledge conversation. And then he's like, I may have made a comment that was inappropriate. I apologize. I meant nothing by it. Are we going to? It was basically kind of like a check in. We're moving on. It's like, so we're not going to really flirt with each other anymore, right? Like, that's all that was.
Can we move past this?
So the second that kid leaves the door, I just love it that Danny gets a call on his cell phone the second they see that dude. It's like, it's the doorman.
Yeah.
Telling us that he's leaving.
Well, paid for it. Good service.
And then Russell says the thing that I immediately thought. If you got a door guy, don't treat him like shit.
Yeah, yeah, right?
Like, the dude's... Like, I understand kind of the purpose of a doorman, but
what's
also...
What's the purpose?
Huh?
What's the purpose?
They're kind of like a thin layer of security between... the outside world and the people in an expensive living situation in New York. That's all it really is. Somebody to check who is coming in and who's going out in a non-super threatening way. It's just a guy that's keeping an eye on the comings and goings for this very situation.
It's a little bit more than that, but yeah, kind of. They also take in the packages. Like they have to make sure that certain... outside parts of the building are clean, otherwise they can get fined. The building can get fined.
Yeah.
Because in New York, I think if you rent a building, you also rent the sidewalk that's in front of it, that's part of the building, and you are in charge of keeping it clean. And if you don't, you get fined and you get charged, or you get, like, things can happen. If you take your trash out and you don't, like, put it out right, you can get fined by the city. So they have a lot more to do than just like that, but that's part of it as well. So they get to know who lives there, so when you come and go, they know who's supposed to be in the building, who isn't, check in and out.
It's also just like, there's no reason not to be nice to them. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, but some doormen are assholes, though.
Like, you see them every day. They work where you live, so you're going to see them. And they're probably like, hey, man, what's going on? Doing good? Cool? Knicks still suck? Boom.
Like, they don't, though.
Are they going to win it?
Anything's possible.
Okay. Don't be a dick to your doorman.
No, yeah,
it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it's like, don't be a dick to your mailman.
It's like, what's the point of doing it?
Yeah, they run the mail.
They run the mail. They track down this kid. They just follow him, and of course, the kid goes to score drugs. They arrest him for scoring the drugs. He tries to put it in his mouth and swallow it, and Danny literally punches him and says, spit it out before I force it out.
That's not the first time Danny has said that.
Ba-dun-dun-tsh.
I'm into a suspect.
Oh. Anyway.
No, he was saying that to, what's her name? Who was the crazy one?
Doreen?
No. What was her name?
The one who was upset because he didn't remember her name?
Yeah.
Ironically.
Yeah, that crazy bitch.
I thought it was Doreen.
This crazy bitch was upset that I didn't even introduce her properly to all my friends.
Look, I don't know why women are upset that after I'm inside them, I don't remember their last name.
Oh, man, that was a good one.
Speaking of relationships, I enjoyed how the beginning of this episode is Sipowicz calling Katie.
Yeah.
It's like, so is Katie also free childcare? Yeah. Like, he just has free childcare up the wazoo.
He just calls all the women he's put his dick in and was like, hey, can you watch my kid?
Hey, watch my kid.
Hey, I have nothing to do with you anymore. Yeah, but just watch my kid.
And one of my favorite things I've ever said about this show, Katie, you're just attractive enough to watch Theo.
Very true.
So they bring that dude in. They bring in Eric Balfour's character. I think his name's Eli, the character's name.
Because you have to stand, you look like the worst alt comic ever.
Yeah. They bring him in, and what I love about this fucking kid is he has a drug beef, right? He walks in and he goes, so here are the conditions.
My favorite is like, doesn't he go off the tangent about his lawyer?
No,
I got a lawyer that's Barracuda.
Yeah.
Call him Barracuda.
I can get a lawyer here in 5 minutes. They call him the Barracuda. And then they're
talking like fucking Putty. Like, it's like if Putty was a kid, a drugged out kid. Hey, I got a lawyer. They call him the Barracuda.
Now I want to do an impression of fucking, I can't remember his name.
Patrick Warburton.
Somebody mentioned that he was in B movie, and the guy started doing it. He's like, oh, it's B. And it just makes me laugh so hard.
Anyway, we haven't talked about the second story.
Not at all. We got to get back to the fucking interrogation, because they bring him in, and he goes, okay, well, I got conditions. We don't need to tell my mom. That's condition number one. I can't even remember this. Like, oh, I won't call the Barracuda if you don't tell my mom, and we can wrap this up quickly.
And then he basically says, yeah, it's all true.
He doesn't, like, there's like no time wasted either.
Yeah.
Because they go, so what happened? He's like, plainclothes cop ran up on me after I get robbed. They took my money and my dope. And it's like, wow, Mondays, am I right? And sure enough. And sure enough, they go, and then why'd you leave the car? He's like, well, the guy pulled a gun out. It's like, he had a gun. He's like, yeah, it was nickel-plated, real ghetto fabulous. It's like, a dude's livelihood is on the line. He helped you, and you ran. And you're just upset you didn't get drugs. And then there was, you know, the bleeding heart liberal part of me was like, they did use this kid's addiction to drugs against him to get what they wanted. And then when he just acknowledges everything. And also, Sipowicz is in the mirror room.
Yeah.
Which is like, I don't know if he'd be allowed to do that.
Yeah, that seems like a conflict of interest. But
he's in there with Valerie Haywood, who has a conversation with Jones we'll talk about, which I find hilarious. But he says, yeah, it was real ghetto fabulous. And they're like, okay, cool, write it down. He's like, we could have done that already.
Exactly.
And they're like, hey, by the way, dude, you're going to have to do a lineup. You're going to have to write shit.
That's fine.
You're going to have to do this. And he goes, oh, my gosh, it's going to take forever. Like, we know. You're addicted to drugs, and you're going to feel like shit, and we don't care.
I know, but you could have just told me, like, hey, tell us the story. We need it written down. I would have wrote it down and told you while I was writing it down. But at least we could have, like, taken care of that already.
He's speaking from a place of, I need heroin. That's why they don't respect his wishes.
And I'm speaking of a place of, if you would have done this, like,
if you would have done it faster,
it would have gotten me out there faster to get heroin.
And we didn't. You just said we haven't talked about the other story, so that basically wraps it all up. Sipowicz is fine now;
he's free.
He
was like Nelson Mandela for a day.
The second story is a
wrongfully imprisoned.
The second story is a Metavoy Jones joint, but they're joined by Connie McDowell,
the blonde
again.
Bombshell herself.
Pew, pew, pew. And Connie McDowell is played by Charlotte Ross. Okay, not a Morning Zoo team. I don't know.
That's our hotness meter.
Charlotte Ross?
No, for Metavoy this episode.
So Metavoy is immediately suspicious, thinks that she's a fucking IAB mole.
Yeah, he's like real intent on her being not good.
And what's interesting is when they first meet up, they're at the bar, I guess. Uncle Eddie just sent everybody home. It's like, nah, they had nothing. And then Jones is even like, cool, can we get their names? Because we might want to talk to him too, because you're kind of shitty at your job. And
That's unfair.
Charlotte rolls up Detective McDowell, and she's like, oh, they heard you were down again, so they sent me over.
You could be respectful. Her name's Detective McDowell, not Charlotte.
Medavoy, what's very weird about this episode, I don't know if you caught it, Medavoy says, you should probably...
Get ready to catch it.
You should probably go to the bathroom in case crime scene missed anything. Yeah. Because it was a robbery, and then two men took a woman into the bathroom and raped her. Not cool. He goes, you should probably go there, because just in case crime scene missed anything.
Yeah.
Skipping ahead, there's a fucking camera in that bathroom. Were they setting up at the very beginning of the case, like, something might be going on in that bathroom that someone should really look at?
Yeah, doesn't crime scene check the whole room?
Supposedly.
From top to bottom.
Not like, well enough.
Like, literally will, like, move the ceiling tile and look inside the ceiling. Like, they look everywhere.
I don't know. Maybe not.
Maybe not.
Maybe they had some sleep at
then
the
what
real
are we
crime
paying
scene.
Them for?
What are we paying them for?
If they answer in the whole room, like, I expect, like, if I was to murder you in this room and leave, I would expect them to, like, pull the lights out and look to see if anything got up in there or anything was put in there. I would expect them to go through this whole room to see what was happening.
Maybe if they had fucking Dexter doing blood splatter analysis, I don't know if they'd check that.
What if I hid something up there? What if I stabbed you and the only way I could hide the weapon was like throwing it up inside that light? Check everything, dude. Check inside the vent. Walter White got away with a lot of shit just by putting stuff inside vents. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, Walter White was just opening his vent in his baby's room, putting shit in there, and he was getting away with it.
I'm just picturing, like, the supervisor of crime scene investigation, like a Michael...
Scott?
No. Fuck, I forgot his... God. Michael Keaton character, like, from the other guys. He walks, he's like, have you seen Breaking Bad? We gotta check the vents, guys. Okay? Walter White got away with a lot of shit because of vents. The idea, the very idea that, like, he's like, did you check the ceiling tiles? Because that happened. That definitely happened because they had to call up and be like, hey, crime scene didn't notice a fucking hidden camera.
Exactly.
So somebody was like, Gary.
Let's have a conversation about this.
How do you miss a fucking camera in the ceiling tiles?
Yeah. How do you miss a hole? That hole was big, too.
It was not a small. It was not a small hole.
Not a small hole. These cameras are from like mid-90s. I mean, so, late 90s, early 2000s.
So what's really unfortunate about the story... Which actually, like, upon the third viewing, I felt...
What was unfortunate was the story itself.
But they had this character who was raped, and they go to talk to her, and she's like, they shoved my head into the sink. I think I saw them. And then when they do the lineup...
She didn't see shit.
It's clear she didn't see their faces, but what's really fucked up...
What's fucked up?
At one point, she just points at a guy who's one of the uniform cops.
Uh-huh.
You recognize him as one of the guys that's in uniform occasionally. And I was like, what if it was that uniform cop?
What if there was the start of like a serial rapist storyline?
Like, what if
it
was
in the
him?
Precinct?
Huh?
And it was in the precinct, and then Sipowicz and Danny figured it out. See, but that would have been cool.
But like that moment when she picks him, and they're like, okay, well, you clearly didn't see them. And I'm like, what if she did and the cop is a rapist?
Yeah.
But they immediately discredit her because she didn't pick the guys that they picked out.
Well, they also come from the time where you don't have to believe women. So, but now we would have immediately arrested that man and like questioned him for at least 24 hours. But back in the day, we didn't have to believe him. So
I was trying to get through this section without saying the quiet part out loud. which is they wouldn't believe her because it's a cop, but you are right, Gail.
No, yeah. Yeah.
Because once she picked him the first time I watched it, I was like, oh, she didn't see them. But I was like, what if it was him?
What if she did see them though?
And what if it's cops and she's the only one that recognized him, but they just don't believe her. There's a lot of moments in NYPD Blue because of its era where, like, it would have taken that turn now and be considered groundbreaking. But they're not going to do that then because cops were still the good
respected guys
mostly.
Yeah. What I found, we're going to get to it, but what I found, so they bring in a group of three guys that, yes, like, match the description of their van, right?
Well, because it matches the robbery description.
Yeah, and so they're like interviewing these guys. Doesn't really go well. They go on about their day.
After the lineup there, they cut them.
So they interview one guy out of the three.
Yeah.
Fast forward, spoiler. You've already kind of mentioned it.
They find the camera.
They go back. They find the camera. Charlotte or Detective
McDowell
goes, how long you own this bar? And he's like, the whole time. And then she slaps him. Like, where's the cape? Tell me where that tape is. You better have the tape. He has the tape. At his house because he's jerking off to it.
Which,
I mean, good for him. Economical.
Well, it's a rape, Kyle.
No, I know. It's despicable.
No, it's also, what's very interesting is they find the camera. I didn't want to cut you off, but I just want to mention this.
But you're going to.
They find the camera after what's her name spilled. She gets that thing spilled on her because she like calls out a patron and she's like, why don't you move somewhere else? And the guy like seemingly intentionally spills it on her.
No, I just think he was super drunk.
I think he intentionally did it because he knows, just like the owner knows, we get to see her titties on camera later. I thought that was intentional.
Well, only you with a fucked up mind would have thought about that.
But they show him the camera and they go, this is a felony and a liquor license.
Loss of liquor license.
License are soon to have him, blah, blah, blah. I was like, after you find out he has the tape at home, goodbye liquor license. Charge the motherfucker.
Yeah.
Like, it's bad.
Charge him anyways. Get what you need and charge him anyways. Yeah, yeah.
Because it's bad enough that he did it and didn't say anything. It's worse to know that he's like, well, get to take that tape home and enjoy it privately.
And he already peed in there once, too. What makes it say he's not watching you pee?
Yep, that's the worst part of this. He's watching people
pee. That's another thing. Like, how many tapes has he taken home? You know, like, weird shit, dude. Weird shit. But what I had a problem with is, like, so they have the tape, and they bring back the other three guys. And then when they go to interview the guys about the rape, they interview a different guy.
Yeah, they had to do that.
But why not put the guy that they interviewed, the guy that's on tape?
Because that guy was the driver. They mentioned specifically that he's the driver and the other two guys are, like, in the van. And when they talked about the initial robbery, the driver is the guy that stayed at the door while the other two guys did the business in the bathroom. That's why they go after him, because that guy that they talk to isn't on that tape. He's never in the room.
Then why not have that guy
be the first person they talk
to? Yeah.
It's a good point.
Because why do we even care about the other guy?
When they did their first interview and they have that first guy, they do that thing where they're like, when you do crimes, it's best not to do it with two other people. Because I know I'm going to get out of here pretty early. Because it's hard enough to get one guy to keep his mouth shut. Two guys? Ain't going to happen. They end up kicking all three of those guys.
They kick them like right away. They don't have anything.
And I'm like, that's kind of a shitty situation. But yeah, they eventually get those guys because they find the tape. I also felt it was awkward because it was Charlotte Ross's second time being Connie McDowell. And they were like, well, we have to figure out a way to get her in her underwear.
Yeah, they did that pretty quick.
It was also a moment in the show where I was like, oh, yeah, they do get people nearly naked on the show. They haven't really seemed to do that a lot lately. But this seems like a weird way to do it. But here we are. Well, what is the end of this episode?
Well, I mean, Sipwitz and Fancy have that really, I guess, deep conversation where Sipwitz is
that's
Fancy,
right.
Like, hey, do you think what I did today was, I did the right thing today?
And Fancy responds with, do I think that you shot at a group of black kids just because they were black? No. Which doesn't mean he doesn't think he didn't do the right thing. It just means that he doesn't think he intentionally did the wrong thing.
Yeah, that's true.
But it was an interesting moment because then Sipwitz basically says, it's just important for me to know that you don't think that about me. And then says, I respect you. And then they leave that conversation.
Sometimes Sipwitz talks like he's like autistic.
I think he is.
Yeah.
I think every date he takes with Cynthia is basically love on the spectrum. I think he's very much on the spectrum in some way. It's very weird. But what other important conversations? About halfway through the episode, Haywood and Jones talk a little bit because they're dating now.
Yeah, well, kind of.
And they talk about it like, oh, well, it was a good time last night, but I don't know if it's a good idea, conflict of interest. And he's like, I've heard it works out pretty well. Heard it from Sipowicz. And she goes, oh, yeah, listening to him's a great idea. And Jones is like, he's just in a jackpot right now. And she's like, you think it'll get worked out? Because keep in mind, Haywood has only had one really bad experience with Sipowicz, and that's about it. So Jones has unwavering support for Sipowicz.
Thin blue line, baby.
Crazy support, where it was almost like you don't have a single doubt in your brain.
The thin blue line.
That Sipowicz did this. Well, not even the thin blue line. Like, just based on every conversation you've had with Sipowicz, the weird interactions. Because there's been times where Sipowicz has said things to Jones, and then Jones is like, I don't know everything about the diversity. What was it?
Yeah.
We don't know everything about this. I don't know him. We didn't do that. There's been moments where Sipowicz has done things that put his foot in his mouth in front of Jones, but Jones still has nothing but support for Sipowicz.
Yeah.
And it ends with him basically looking at Haywood going, so, looks like I told you so. Looks like I was right. And then she's like, yeah, I guess you were right. And he's like, so date. So date on top of that? You get to tell me I'm right some more?
Yeah, Jones knows that Sipowicz comes from a time where, like, you can be racist, but you're still, like, you don't pull your gun out, you know what I mean? Like, unless you see the other gun.
So you think, hold on.
He comes from that old school mentality
you
don't draw unless you see a gun, but then when you do, you just draw and start blasting.
But you think... So you think Jones is thinking, look, Sipowicz might be a little bit racist, but there's no way he screwed up this shoot.
Yeah.
That's your take on him? Not that he just not that he just believes that Sipowicz is a good guy? Because he says he's the best damn detective I've ever seen.
Yeah. This still doesn't mean he's not racist.
All right. The end of the episode has a meeting with Sipowicz and Sorensen to wrap up the cases and basically give each other a handshake out of thanks for saving my ass. But I did want to mention that in the wrap-up of the case, they mentioned that the gentleman in the car that robbed the guy, because they are college students and apparently on the dean's list at Albany State.
Yeah. I mean, it is just Albany State, though.
And they say, yeah, they like to... They like to come into the city and do crime to make sure they got their street chops.
Cred, but...
They say chops. That's
unfortunate.
That's Danny being an old man. Why do I believe that's bullshit? That two guys who...
That could happen. It could be. It could happen.
Who you just are come, in college.
I'm not saying they come in and commit crimes and shit, but like, what if they come back home and they like party with them and stuff? It could be that. Like, you may not come home every time you come back from Albany State and you're like, hey, let's go beat up a white guy and steal his drugs. But, like, maybe you're like, why are they out till 6 a.m.? You know what I mean? Like, they were just out partying, having a good time.
But it really seemed like that seems like bullshit.
And they were about to drive back to Albany State after being up all night to go to class? That's crazy.
That's the crime.
That's crazy. That's like a two and a half hour drive, and then you're going to go to class? Okay, yeah, okay. I'm going to class. Fuck out of here. Those kids ain't going to fucking class. Ain't happening. Especially after they just robbed a kid with all of his coke. They're going to go do that coke.
Look, these kids, they're young go-hards, but they're intellectuals.
They're going to go do those drugs. They're not going to class. I'm not saying they're not on the dean's list. I'm not saying you can't be both, but they ain't going to class.
But that's how the episode ends. The two men giving each other respectful handshakes. The one thing that we forgot to mention, I guess another important conversation, during the hailstorm against Sipowicz, he gets a call from Cynthia because Uncle Eddie just called her to tell her that Sipowicz was shot at.
Well, he asked Jones and Medavoy at the bar. He's like, "How's Andy?" And then he like fabricates the story and makes it sound bigger than it is.
Because he said there were five guys when he go to talk to him at first.
And then and then he gets the call later and Cynthia's worried, and that pisses off Andy because it's like, "Why are you talking about my business?"
I would like to tell her in my own time.
Yeah. Then he confronts Eddie about it and is kind of a dick.
And there's a moment where he confronts Eddie where he says, "Yeah, now you told her she's going to think about jumping ship if it goes the other way." Implying if he gets arrested and put on the news for shooting at a bunch of black kids, she'll then be like, "You know what? Maybe this relationship isn't for me."
Yeah.
Which I think after the conversation you had with her on the street where she said, where you said, "You used to be able to, whatever happened in a room was in a room. Now you're on the news." I think she is kind of down with the blue line a little bit.
It's in her family.
Like, it probably wouldn't be an immediate, like, "Oh, he's a horrible person." But
yeah, I think the blue line, her house is painted blue. Like, Eddie, her family's in the force. Like, what?
House is painted blue. Anyway, I think that's it for this episode. I'm going to look. You got anything you wanted to say before we wrap it up?
No.
All right.
I think we hit everything.
So that was Peeping Tommy, which refers to the owner of the bar, which I don't think they say his name once. And if they do,
I think they do.
Remember.
I think that I think when she gets the thing spilt on her, before that happens, they go to talk to him. And I think one of them says, like, "Who's Tommy so-and-so?" And then they're like, "Oh, they talk to the bar owner." But that's about it. I don't think there's more than that. I think it's dumb that they focus the whole episode on Sipowicz, but then name it after
Tommy.
The side story.
I agree. I think that was a bad move. But next episode we got is, what's it called?
Something about thumb enhancement surgery.
Thumb enchanting evening.
Oh.
Thumb enchanting evening.
Thumb enhancement surgery.
Not the same, but interesting in its own way.
Thank you again for listening to this episode of NYPD Blue Balls. Please rate and review it on whatever platform you're using to listen to it. It's how people see the podcast. And more importantly, we might get more people watching the best show ever, NYPD Blue. If you just need more NYPD Blue info in your life, there's a couple of books out there. What Would Sipowicz Do? A collection of articles about the show. True Blue, a book written about the first couple seasons by creators and consultants. Gene Kendall's An Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue on Amazon for, I believe, 99 cents. And then there's a couple of side stories, Blue Beginnings and Blue Blood by Max Allen Collins. If you can find them for a decent price, they're a pretty good read. We are on social media that we hardly ever use, Asher Brothers Podcast on Instagram and Asher Bros Pod on X, but honestly, I never use X, and I'm really only on Instagram making sure people know when new episodes are coming out, which are every other Tuesday. If you like the sound of my voice and enjoy movies or video games, head over to twitch.tv/KirkHasGlasses Monday nights and Sunday mornings. That's twitch.tv/KirkHasGlasses.